You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
I'm Maria Perrin. I'm Chief Growth Officer for HMS.
Hi, Maria. Thanks so much for finding time to be with us on the Ivy Podcast today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background, what falls under your purview within the organization, and maybe a little bit more about your company?
Sure. Well, first I'll start with the company. HMS is a healthcare IT company. We are mission-bound to make healthcare better for everyone. We work for 50 government agencies and over 300 health plans. And we deliver solutions that save costs, analyze population health risks, engage patients and educate them on their healthcare, and also just make healthcare more efficient. And my role there is Chief Growth Officer. So I am responsible for the strategy of the company, as well as client engagement, account management, business development, marketing, and government relations. Just a few things there.
Oh, wow. You're definitely wearing quite a few hats within the organization.
Well, I guess when you think about, you know, growth and being Chief Growth Officer, it takes a lot of different areas to make that happen.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's not just a one lane, road that you're only responsible for strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, formulating a strategy is, you know, multifaceted aspect. So I can only understand. I'd like to talk a little bit more about this on the podcast, but from a standpoint of just healthcare industry in general, can you tell us a little bit more about what trends or ideas that excite you the most in, you know, currently in the current times? What are you most passionate about?
Yeah, thank you for the question, because as you know, healthcare is going through interesting times now with the pandemic. But I'd like to focus more on one trend that I think is very important over the long term. And that is that the healthcare industry has realized that physical medical care is not the only thing we need to keep someone healthy. We have to address the whole person. So you might or might not have heard this term, but addressing the whole person means dealing with their medical issues, but also dealing with their behavioral health issues, as well as any social determinants they might have. And, you know, when I say social determinants, I'm talking about someone's access to healthy food or adequate housing or transportation, you know, socioeconomic factors that really will impact their health status. What's interesting is that the healthcare industry today understands that a person's zip code may be more of a determinant to whether they're healthy as to whether they have access to health insurance. Now we're starting to think about, you know, how do we best address when someone has both a behavioral and a mental health condition, and creating integrated care models. We're also trying to address when someone is, has food insecurity, getting them access to healthy food, transportation, getting them access to their medical appointments, and a whole host of other things that are more comprehensive. This is the most exciting thing, I think, that's happening in healthcare today.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely relate. It's on that same topic, exactly what you're talking about. Good friend of mine. His name is Dr. Chen, and he's a chief medical officer at ChenMed. And him and I, we spoke exactly on that same topic as far as, you know, that preventive care. It's, you know, really focusing on the overall aspect of the entire lifestyle, that it's not just the one aspect of a thing that, you know, you get sick, you go treat it, and you can expect the same result coming back and forth. So it's exciting to hear what you're talking about. I can definitely see that kind of the overall health being the entire lifestyle. That's what comes all about that, especially with, you know, with the senior citizens and trying to start that early. I think that's, you know, that definitely resonates, and I can relate how that can be a big trend, big idea. That's super exciting. When we talk about innovation or building a culture of innovation. It's something that I'm personally very passionate about. I do a lot of research. A lot of my clients, you know, that's a prevalent topic and everyone's very interested in this. And from your standpoint, being in charge of strategy and the overall kind of direction of the organization, building and fostering that culture of innovation, I'm pretty sure that's a pretty significant part of that. Curious to get your take on some of the strategies or initiatives in place that you had implemented or something that you've been thinking about that really lets you create this culture of innovation. And it's something that maybe had worked for you in the past or has not. Just curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, I love the question. Certainly at HMS, innovation is a core value for us. And we don't just say it, we live it every day. And I'll just give you a few examples of some of the programs that we have in place to really foster that amongst all of our teams, not just a few who work in strategy or product development. So one of the programs we have is called Results Accelerator. And there we take a cross-functional team and put them on a strategic or operational goal or challenge and give them 90 days to achieve what might be a seemingly impossible goal in that time period. But they need to use every aspect of innovation to get it done. And often they do. And it's different from a standard cross-functional team in that we don't select the people based on the department they work for, but rather based on their individual skill set and how they relate to a particular goal. So, for example, someone in marketing may be working on a product delivery challenge, and someone from accounting may be working on a technical challenge, just based on what individual experience and skill sets they have in their background. And this is really important because it brings to light very different perspectives on a typical challenge than you might have, say, if you only put the strategy team on it, or you only put the business development or product development team on it. And it's been very successful for us. The other thing about the program and how we constructed it is the teams have a lot of autonomy in making decisions. So while they may come to the executive team for a financial ask, say for resources, they have a lot of autonomy in figuring out how they're going to get the work done. And that has led to, I think, some very different results from when it's a top-down push. And we're really excited about it. The other things we do frequently that some other teams and companies are doing successfully are regular hackathons to develop new technical ideas. And this week, we did a datathon. We partnered with an accelerator in Australia and gave PhD students a massive amount of data to comb through and find out through their process how they can use data to develop better telehealth programs or insights about telehealth usage. And the early results are quite exciting. I think we're out of this datathon, we're going to be able to develop some new solutions that are valuable to the healthcare industry.
Wow, that's really cool. I love those examples and they definitely resonate. I spend a lot of time talking to different executives of different companies, and it's definitely exciting to hear, you know, companies implementing initiatives as such that you're talking about. You know, the rotation program, I think that's pretty genius. And I'm pretty sure that's a great source of different ideas for you guys that you may have not thought about when a person from a completely different functional area tries to operate in this particular domain. I'm pretty sure they come up with some very creative ways to solve problems for your customers and, you know, and so forth. That's really exciting. I'm definitely, you know, I've been taking notes as you were talking. So when next time I talk to, you know, some of my clients, we're definitely going to discuss that. That's excellent. I want to shift gears a little bit to talk to you a little about the topic that's very highly requested on the Ivy Podcast amongst our audience. And, you know, it's been very exciting to hear that kind of that trend really taking, you know, seeing a lot of growth in from that aspect. And what I'm talking about is female executive leadership or women in leadership roles, board presence and so forth, especially, you know, in healthcare and technology in very niche domains. from your standpoint, what can you, I know it's a very loaded question that we can probably talk about, you know, the entire episode about that. But if you were to highlight one or two things that you could share with our, you know, female listeners when it comes to career growth, work-life balance, and anything that you wish you did during your early stages of your career.
Yeah, of course I'm going to love this topic, right? And, you know, women are still underrepresented in the healthcare industry and in across most industries in terms of the C-suite and board representation, but we're starting to make headway. And I would say from my own perspective, I took a very non-traditional path to the C-suite. And some of the things that I did was do a lot of lateral moves to switch disciplines earlier in my career and get a very broad understanding of all of the functions and disciplines one might need to run a business. So, for example, I worked in finance, I worked in product development, I switched and took an operations role, I switched and took a marketing role. Each time I might not have gotten a promotion, but I took a chance that lateral moves would pay off, and for me, they did. The other thing I did was I explored different industries. So I think many people have a passion for an industry. They might start out young in that industry, or they might just feel pigeonholed. What I did is I worked in consumer packaged goods. I worked for the auto industry. I worked in entertainment and ultimately worked in healthcare and technology. And while those industry switches may have slowed down my progression early in my career because I had to learn a new industry, ultimately, I ended up really understanding what I was passionate about and what I was good at. And that helped me to propel my career in the back half. And it also helped me to build these transferable skills and understand best practices and take them from each industry and contribute them to the companies that I've worked with, you know, over the past decade. And it's made a real difference for me. Now, you asked me a second question about work-life balance as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to address that because certainly in the pandemic, I see that the work-life balance issues are really magnified. And in one way, they have been a negative for women and for anyone who are the primary caretakers in their home, whether that's caretakers of children or parents, for those in the sandwich generation like myself. And so all of a sudden we have people, mothers in particular, who have to help kids with virtual school from home while they're also working full time. And that in some ways have had a negative impact, but I would say, for me personally, the pandemic has had a positive impact on work-life balance. So for me for many women, the pandemic has shown that many jobs can be done remotely. And what does that mean? It means more flexibility in managing home life and your career without having the same rigorous challenges with travel and with having to do long commutes. And having to physically be somewhere while also having to think about what's happening at home. So I think where we are in terms of work-life balance with more remote work is showing that we can do more jobs remote, and that can have a positive impact on work-life balance. I'm you know, watching this closely to see how we can take advantage of this and elevate more women and other people who have these challenges in the workforce.
Right, absolutely. Wow, those are great insights. Thank you for sharing that. And from a standpoint of kind of that remote workforce and from the flexibility standpoint, something I want to add is us at our company at ProSource, our primary business is partner with companies, find very niche talent in IT, advanced technologies, AI, machine learning, and so forth. And previously, you know, pre-pandemic, it was very challenging to convince some of our clients to consider, you know, employees or candidates that are not physically located in their office space or in their particular state. And it was a huge challenge. But when pandemic hit, there was no choice. And that really kind of proved the point that if you have a great infrastructure, if you have a great culture, if you have, of course, there's some exceptions, but in general, there are ways to make it work. And for not only for the organization to be successful, but for these consultants or for these contingent workers to be able to succeed and help the organization remotely, I think that's super exciting. Is one of the trends that I've been observing lately that's going to come out as hopefully, you know, relatively soon as, you know, the pandemic, hopefully on the downshift, and we'll be past that. When we talk about building teams, surrounding yourself with winners, I'm pretty sure you as an executive, for you, that's a 24/7 job that never stops, that you're always on the lookout for top talent. It doesn't matter if you do that intentionally or not. It's at the top of their mind for a lot of executives. So curious, I have a couple of questions around that. But number one is when candidates interview with you, I'm pretty sure they go through different rounds of interviews, assessments, and so forth. But when they get to you, give us a glimpse of an interview with Maria. What does that look like? Do you tend to get creative with it, or do you keep it pretty traditional? But more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you hear them?
Yes. And I do want to acknowledge your comment about, you know, always seeking top talent. People are the most important aspect of my company and my team's success. Even though we're a technology company, it's all about the people. So we are always also on the lookout for top talent, and it's an important question. So for an interview with me, I really want to hear what attracts the individual to the company and to the job, and not the standard answer. I don't want them to rehearse the answer that says, this is how you answer this question. I really respect an authentic reason for wanting to come to work for the company. If someone said to me, I want this job because I need to make more money and this pays better, I would respect that. I really want to hear the truth. And that helps me assess what their motivation is and whether that motivation will be a good fit for the company, because I want them to be a success in the company, and I want them to stay with the company a long time. And the motivation for entering the company is important. I also like to understand how they solve problems, their work process, and how they deal with people. So I would not say that an interview with me is a standard interview that someone might have with another company. I really just want to understand how they think. Lastly, I want to know what's unique about them. I truly value diversity of thought, diversity of background, diversity of approach, and believe that we have a stronger team when we're inclusive and don't have a cookie cutter of what the teammate looks like. Mm-hmm. So I really probe on, you know, how is this person unique and how are they going to complement the group rather than just mirror the group and individuals that I already have on the team. So inclusion and diversity is quite key, and I'm likely to ask a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, that's pretty unique, and thank you for sharing that. It's definitely, you know, there's no right or wrong way. It's always very subjective, but also it's giving an opportunity for the candidate to interview you as well, for them to really understand who is in charge, who's leading the organization, and get a sense of, you know, that leadership style. I think that's also very unique from that standpoint. So thank you for sharing that. And when we talk about healthcare or your industry in general, or, you know, your particular domain, when we talk about, you know, strategy definition and a lot of those company leading, you know, activities, What are some of the most in-demand skill sets that are very hard to find in your industry? And when we talk about those very niche, hard to find skill set, the second full question is, how do you go about, you know, finding that? How do you attract that type of talent to your organization?
Yeah, good question. Certainly for healthcare technology companies, data scientists and data analytics skills are in very high demand right now. So anyone focused on artificial intelligence and machine learning really is in high demand, as well as for us, clinicians that maybe are not wanting to practice anymore but want to bring their skill sets to developing solutions for the healthcare industry, policy experts, and sales and marketing skills are always in demand as well. Someone who can really understand the client's needs and their strategies and match our solutions to them. So those are all skills we're always looking for. How we attract those types of people to our company, we get a lot of referrals from existing team members. So, you know, keeping people happy and keeping the culture up, as you mentioned, has a residual impact because then they refer their friends, their networks to our company. We do a lot of industry networking. We continue to build out our online presence and our thought leadership because we find that has attracted a lot of candidates to us. They may read our content marketing or look at ways that we're engaging in new products or engaging with the industry and say, that sounds exciting to me, I want to be a part of it. Uh-huh. And lastly, I would say we do have internship programs. So we're interested in attracting professionals who are either in school and exploring different career paths, or even people who want to change industries and careers and want to dip their toe in the water with an internship. We do offer those as well.
Well, that's pretty cool. And, you know, it's often, you know, it seems simple, but often overlooked strategy to find the talent, because, and we deal with that on a daily basis where some of our clients come to us and say, hey, we need to find somebody, you know, it's a unicorn and they have X type of skills and X number of years of experience, and we can only pay X much. So it's these type of combinations are often, you know, very, very challenging. And it takes both sides to find that right balance in between. But what the reason I'm saying is, I have found a lot of companies who really succeed in this space are willing to take more risks when it comes to finding someone who is less experienced but willing to learn, and actually investing a little bit more into their development, into kind of that training program that really creates that almost mentality of almost, you know, growing with the company. And I think that's pretty unique, you know, interesting aspect of that, attracting the talent. And it goes hand in hand with what you were talking about. So I really appreciate that insight. Maria, I'm pretty sure you read a lot, and I'm pretty sure you recommend a lot of books to others that you talk to. What are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
So I'm going to twist this a little, John, and say that I'm not going to recommend a book.
Okay.
I am going to recommend a podcast instead.
All right.
You're in the podcast industry, so you might appreciate it. But the podcast that I listen to almost every day is How I Built This. It's from NPR. You might be familiar with it, Guy Raz. He also actually has a book, How I Built This. So if someone does want to read instead of listen, I recommend them getting this book, How I Built This. But this podcast is focused on entrepreneurs who have built great companies, their challenges, their failures, their ultimate successes. And I find both in the book and in the podcast great illustrations of company growth playbooks, as well as interesting career paths. So the podcast or the book, whichever way you choose to go, I think How I Built This is just a great wealth of information for individuals who are doing exploration in their career, as well as trying to figure out how am I going to grow my business or my company's business.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a great recommendation. I definitely heard of that podcast, but I haven't had a chance to take a listen, but I absolutely will be, you know, being an entrepreneur myself, it's always exciting to hear, you know, different stories, especially when it comes directly from someone who has done that, succeeded or failed. So those are usually the most exciting stories. Maria, I know you're very busy setting the strategy and leading your organization. Thank you so much for your time today. Lots of great insights. It was a very short yet very, you know, very powerful conversation. I learned quite a bit. I'm looking forward to staying in touch with you, and thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.